We played Glastonbury. I was just looking out this massive crowd, and everybody's got like flags and banners and things. And in the middle of it all, there was somebody had a big banner that said Wenger out.
Oh. Wenger out at Glastonbury.
I won a training session with Santi Cazorla.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I flew to Munich. Bayern came out and just ripped Arsenal to pieces.
Hello, I'm David Vianic.
And I'm Specs Gonzalez.
And this is Stripped, brought to you by William Hill.
In this show, we talk to celebrity guests as we get nostalgic looking back at retro football shirts that made us fall in love with the game.
That is right. Our guests pick four shirts that tell the story of their life. The first one, the haunted one, the unforgettable one, and the named one.
Man, today's guest, boy, he's a rock and roll Hall of Famer. The lead guitarist for the Foo Fighters. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Chris Shiflett!
Woo! Yay! And thanks for having me. I love coming on other people's shows because, you know, I do a podcast myself. I love not having to prepare any questions. And I love being on shows that aren't like music focused because it's just fun to talk about anything else.
Of course. Well, for me, I mean, you are the first rock star I've ever spoke to.
Same.
Wow. Well, yeah, I hope I don't let you down.
it's a privilege.
Of course. Well, this is Stripped. You know, it's a show where we get nostalgic. We talk about football shirts. We start off with the first one.
That is right. This is the first shirt you've chosen. You know, everybody has that one football shirt that made them fall in love with the game, you know, of football / soccer. And you have picked the Arsenal 1997 home shirt.
Yes!
It's the JVC Jovka.
Arsenal,
classic shirt, nice white collar, red down the center, white sleeves, the older badge as well, a bit more classic in general. And it's an absolute beauty, but what made you pick the shirt, Chris?
Well, I should have worn the shirt. I actually have the replica version hanging in my closet right now. So I should have put that on for the interview if I had thought this out a little better.
That's all right.
But yeah, that's like, you know, that to me, that's like the classic strip, you know. I kind of sort of half got, like, you got to understand, like, I grew up in California. We didn't know anything about football. We knew some of the names, you know, of some of the famous teams, but like it wasn't on TV when I was growing up. It wasn't like something that you ever saw any coverage of. I mean, you'd hear about like World Cup. There was like a soccer league they tried to start in the late 70s in America that kind of happened for a little while. You know, Pele was played in it sort of towards the end of his career. And so there was that moment. But other than that, it was just something that like everybody did when I was a kid, but nobody knew much about. And so, you know, when I was a little bit older, I read, like in the early 90s, I read that Johnny Lydon autobiography that he put out in the early 90s. And he talks a lot about being an Arsenal fan. And it just sounded cool. You know, it's like I was kind of turned on to the whole thing through rock and roll, really, and punk rock especially. You know, always had like kind of an affiliate. Like you'd see these bands from the UK, and they'd be wearing the different strips and scarves, and there was all that. It was sort of tied in with football culture, and it just seemed like this cool kind of exotic thing that we didn't have here. And so when I read that book and Johnny Rotten talked about being an Arsenal fan, I just thought, you know, okay, that'd be my team. And then the first time I went to England, I don't remember where I bought the jersey, or I'm sorry, the strip.
You can say jersey. You can say jersey.
Jersey, shirt, kit.
Yeah. Does anybody call it a jersey over there? Like in America, we call it like soccer cleats, and then you guys call them like football boots or what. You know, there's all these little distinctions.
We always say shirt or kit.
So I bought a shirt when I was there. I could dig up some old photos of that No Use for Name. I used to be before I was in the Foo Fighters, I was in a band called No Use for a Name, and we went over on tour to Europe, and we did some shows in the UK, and I bought my first Arsenal strip on that run, and I have a picture of it somewhere, and that's, you know, basically why I chose the JVC one, because it's that shirt, you know, even though I bought like some cheap crummy replica version of it. But yeah, like that was like would have been around like 1997. And while we were in London, I actually went to my first football game ever. And the singer in our band, his parents were English, and I think his dad was a Derby County supporter or something. So we actually went to see Derby County play Tottenham in London at White Hart Lane. And like, I didn't even understand I didn't know the Tottenham. Yeah, I didn't know anything about the game, really. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I didn't know all those little, like the rivalries and all that stuff. So I didn't put that together until later. Like, oh, that's kind of ironic that my first actual live match was at White Hart Lane, you know, and I'm an Arsenal supporter.
It's good that you never wore your shirt, because that wouldn't have been...
imagine that.
Right? I'm pretty sure I got the shirt afterwards at some point, so that would have been really funny if I was like the American guy with a thing of fish and chips and a beer, like, hey, guys, why are you chasing me?
What did you think of London when you first arrived, and especially like, even Tottenham as an area? I mean, they've got a new stadium now. I don't know if you've...
Well, that's where he lives.
Yeah.
That's where
I live, right next to the stadium now. What did you think of just London?
It's so funny because... Yeah, I grew up such an Anglophile, with British culture kind of surrounding rock and roll, like so many of my favorite bands came from England. And so I just had that obsession. Then we also grew up like watching like the Benny Hill Show and Monty Python, and all the stuff that were like sort of like, sort of perverted takes on British culture and all that stuff. And so I had like, I didn't know it. It took me a few times going over there to really like first like song lyrics and things and reference points culturally to begin to make sense. Like it, after being there a few times, like I started to make sense of like, jam records and lyrics and stuff that they had. So, but yeah, like in those days, I remember we got into London. This was way before I was in the Foo Fighters, so it was kind of at a different level. And we just stayed at some hotel in some nondescript neighborhood that I can't even remember where we were. And just it just seemed like you were like, it was London's so big, and it was so hard to figure out and navigate and figure out where to go. And I think we went to like Carnaby Street and maybe went to the Merc and bought some, bought like a Fred Perry and some things that you couldn't get in America, at that point. But yeah, I mean, my mind was blown, especially I remember going to that first game and taking the tube there, and like everybody in the train station, I remember getting out and walking through the train and it was just like a sea of white shirts, and walking out onto the street. And, we don't really have that thing here of like big stadiums kind of in residential neighborhoods the way it is in a lot of the UK, especially those old stadiums, and so that whole thing, it just felt like, the streets were just poor, like, everybody was, it was just a sea of white, and people were walking down the street and were buying beers and like I said, buying fish and chips and just kind of soaking it all in. It was fun, man. It was mind blowing for sure.
I'm going to ask you a hard question here. I mean, was there any football players you remember? Whether it was for Arsenal or...
Well, I remember from that game, I remember David Ginola.
David Ginola.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. But around that time, by the time when I first ever went to an Arsenal game would have been a little bit later, and that would have been after I joined the Foo Fighters. I joined the Foo Fighters in 99. Mm-hmm. And probably went to the first Arsenal game I ever went to, probably like 2000, 2001. There's a guy who's a good friend of mine at the time, worked at our label, and he was an Arsenal supporter, and he had season tickets, and he took me to a few games. And it's funny because I did this other football podcast recently, and I was asking my friend Richard, I was like, what games did we go to? And neither of us could remember. So I know I saw them in that era, through in and around the sort of invincible era when things were really rolling. But I was just really only paying attention kind of when I would be over there and still not really like watching it closely. And even when I really tried to start paying attention, I hadn't grown up with it. So it felt like it took me a long time to even just kind of begin to understand the game and how it all works, But it was really a little bit later, like probably 2012, 2013, that I really dug into it and like it took hold. You know, before that, it was almost just more like it was about the strip. You know, it was like it was like almost like just like a fashion accessory. That's what starts it.
Like fashion and experience rather than the actual game and the results and all sorts.
Yeah.
But is there a player
sitting there, and we're hearing everybody singing along, and you got a beer in your hand, and it's just that like it's really like it's like rock and roll, you know? I mean, those football games over there feel like you're at a rock and roll show.
I say it's almost like a religion. You know, you've got the stadium, like a church. Yeah. You've got the songs. Yeah, sure. It feels like that sometimes. Yeah. Is there a player then? I mean, later on, would you say do you have like a favorite Arsenal player that you were drawn to?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. I mean, obviously, you know, you got like Thierry Henry, you know, through that time, and Tony Adams, and like, you know, all the cats that were around Vieira, and like, you know, just that whole period. But the one that always when I get asked that question, the one that always sticks out to me is Santi Cazorla, because I actually, because I won at a fundraiser at the Emirates. I won in an auction, I won a training session with Santi Cazorla.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then came back like the next season and brought my kids, and he trained my kids out at Colney.
Sick.
And then we went to go see Watford the next day, went to go see them play Watford the next day, and they crushed them like 4-0. It was great. Fantastic. So that's a really happy memory. You know, that is no doubt the most time I ever spent in the presence of an actual Arsenal player.
Santi's a great player.
Yeah. I mean, one of Arsenal's technical greats. Like, no one, it's out of him and Bergkamp, they say.
Did you train yourself as well? Like in a session, or was it just your kids?
No, just my kids. Yeah, yeah. I thought it would be a little like, I don't know, be a little awkward if he was training me. I was too old.
Did you meet any other players, Chris?
Yeah, man. I met at that, I remember Elneny. Came through and stopped and said hi to my kids. That was cool. But I had already met Petr Cech. Well, at the fundraiser thing that I went to, I kind of met just in passing, Giroud was on the team then, Sanchez. I remember accosting Sanchez as he was going, and I was coming out of the bathroom and he was going in my eyes, bugged out of my head. I was like, "Hey, man." And he looked at me like, "Hey, dude, I'm just trying to go to the bathroom." But somewhere around all that time, Foo Fighters played a charity show over there, and Petr Cech came to the show, and he was in his final season at Chelsea at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was just excited to meet him. He's a legend. And then the very next season, he came to Arsenal, and I was like, "Yes, finally got an in. I've got an in." And he's a drummer actually, and he's been out to a bunch of Foo Fighters shows over the years.
Cech loves music, doesn't he?
He's moved to Arsenal because of you.
Exactly, that's right. I put the bug in his ear. I put the whole deal together.
Oh, that's wicked.
I willed it to happen.
Petr Cech's a drummer. I didn't know Petr Cech's a drummer.
Yeah, mate. I think I interviewed him ages ago. Yeah, he's a really for like goalkeepers. I mean, they have a reputation in the sport of being a bit more quirky, a bit more on the outside, a bit more into different types of hobbies than your outfield players. I can relate. I was a goalkeeper myself at a younger age, and a bit, we're a bit out there a little bit.
He's a goalie.
I always thought it was kind of funny that Petr Cech and I met Tomas Rosicky at that fundraiser thing, and only the Eastern Europeans know who the rock bands are. All the other young players were they're into house music or something. I don't know what they're into, like pop music or something.
Yeah.
They're just like, who's this old guy? But the Eastern Europeans are like, yes, rock.
We love the rock and roll. Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
That's very, very true. Well, yeah, Arsenal, man. It is a great club, and one of the more heavily supported clubs, I'd say, in London.
Yeah, well, it's nice, things have obviously been, we've been through this extended, kind of rough patch for a while, especially since Wenger left and at the end of his time there. So it's so nice. It's the interesting thing with football. I'm also a boxing fan, and in boxing, when your favorite fighter gets old, it's over. You know, there's no rebuild. Mm. But in football and other sports, you know, your team goes through these ebbs and flows, and it feels like a nice time to be an Arsenal fan right now. Yeah. You know, there's a real sense of optimism there. Things are going well, and they're playing great, and they've had a great transfer season, and, you know, all the new guys seem to be slotting in really well. And I don't know. It just feels like the first – I just went to a game at the Emirates a couple of weeks ago when I was in London and saw them play Villa, and it just felt so good in the stadium, man. People were just singing and cheering and really up for it.
I was there, actually. It was a 2-1 win, I think. I think it was a last-minute winner. Or am I wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was there for that one.
Sorry, because he goes to a lot of games. He goes to a lot of like World Cups. He's like a rock and roll football.
Yeah, a little bit. I think we both are. I feel like I'm the drummer and you're the guitarist.
Yeah, I'm the guitarist. Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's our vibe, definitely.
The unforgettable one.
Yeah, this is your second shirt that you have picked for us. Is the 1996-97 St. Pauli home kit. Obviously, St. Pauli, iconic club, but this shirt, it's sponsored by Roysch. The sponsor is Boklunda. I'm not sure what that is.
I reckon that's yogurt.
Do you reckon Boklunda's a yogurt?
I think it's yogurt, yeah.
Ooh, let me have a guess. Boklunda. I'm going to go for chocolate.
Chris, what do you think Boklunda is?
The producer behind the camera is going to look up what Boklunda is.
Chris, have a guess?
I think... chocolate yogurt sounds about right. Yeah. I think it wasn't one of their strips like a dark brown. So there you go.
You know, we found out what it was. It's a sausage.
Oh, well, there
it's
you
a
go.
Sausage. Okay. Boklunda sausage. That's pretty cool.
It's St. Pauli was an easy choice because, and again, this goes back to the fashion accessory thing. Mm-hmm. I think everybody in punk rock bands and rock and roll bands buys a St. Pauli strip at some point because the frickin' logo is the skull and crossbones. It's like they're probably the most heavily merchandised team that nobody actually supports or knows anything about. Like, I have never followed them, but I've probably had 20 St. Pauli strips or T-shirts, you know, over the course of the years that I've toured over there.
Yeah, but I mean, as a club, it's I feel like it's. Yeah, apart from obviously the logo itself, it does have an ethos, you could say, of rock and roll. It is, you know, very liberal. It's against the establishment. It's known to be a lot more political than other clubs. And, you know, it doesn't really reach the Bundesliga. Sometimes, you know, they've been there a few times. Mm-hmm. But there is that sort of, I don't know, it's out there. It is niche. Mm-hmm. But there is a cult, should I say, like a cult following of the club. And, yeah, it really does fit that rock and roll vibe.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember... I don't know exactly how this happened, but I remember the promoter at one of our shows over there years ago maybe heard that I was a St. Pauli supporter or something, or saw that I was wearing the T-shirt, something like that, and actually arranged for a couple of their players to come down and, like, you know, give me a strip and like say hello and everything. And it was so awkward because I don't actually know anything about the club. Like, I don't follow it. I didn't know who they were. I had to, like, kind of pretend, oh, man, how are you guys doing this season? Great. Awesome. You know, cool. Keep going. You know, like, it really put me on the spot.
That'd be like us wearing a Dodgers baseball. Yeah, like, it looks cool.
Exactly.
And I'm like, I don't know anything about baseball.
I mean, St. Pauli is not new to me. I remember Arsenal had a Japanese player called Ryo Miyashi, who was one of the fastest players at Arsenal. And he ended up we ended up sending Miyashi to St. Pauli, and he stayed there for 7 years.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. There's the connection.
It's a connection right there.
That's why I wear their strips.
Yeah, and the punk. I'm just reading my script in the 80s. The punks, apparently, lots of punks went to support St. Pauli as well because of this.
Exactly. There's a real punk rock connection to St. Pauli, but I'm sure that stems not just from their, you know, anti-elitist ways, but from the skull and crossbones.
But, you know, as the shirt that we've got here, you know, it's very nice. The stripes, black and white, you know, red as well. Red's
stripes
a big part
so
of the club.
Nostalgic stripes.
Stripes is nostalgic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like old school kits always had a decent stripe. And, you know, apart from the sausage.
But really,
as well.
to be fair, like the St. Pauli item that you really want is not so much the strip, it's the T-shirt. Mm.
Yeah, the black shirt and it.
T-shirt. Yeah.
Skull and crossbones.
Or the patch for your denim jacket. You know, that's also good.
Big vibes. But you played football as well, right? Like when you were younger, you enjoyed kicking ball.
I played at the sort of youth league level growing up. In California, we have this thing called AYSO. It's like American Youth Soccer Organization. Like I said, everybody played it when I was a kid. So I played it until I started playing guitar, which I never put that connection together until people asked me about it. But as soon as I started playing guitar and really got into music and going to shows and just sort of dove more into that, I stopped doing any athletic stuff. So I never really, and I came to realize once I had kids of my own that you don't really become at that age, it's kind of like, it's like a swarm of bees, you know, that wherever the ball goes, every single kid on the pitch just chases it around. Yeah. You know what I mean? That thing, doesn't really turn into football until around seventh or eighth grade, you know, when people are like actually holding their position and some strategy comes into it and all that sort of thing, which I realized watching my own kids play. I was like, God, I always wondered, I played growing up, but I'm so terrible now when I go play in pickup games and just have like no football IQ at all, it seems. And then I figured it out. I'm watching my own kids. I was like, they started to really get, it started to become football when they were, you know, once they hit those teenage years, you know? So that damn rock and roll got me sidetracked from my, you know, footballing ways.
So Chris, you've been in a lot of bands. How did you end up in the Foo Fighters?
I was playing, I was in this band called No Use for a Name, in the mid to late 90s. And making records and doing like punk rock tours and stuff. And I got a call one day from Foo Fighters tour manager, Gus, who's still our tour manager, saying that that they were having auditions in LA and asked me if I wanted to come out and audition. And of course I jumped at the chance and went and auditioned and wound up getting the gig, you know? It was wild. I didn't have any connection to them socially or anything. I'd never really met the guys in the band prior to that. And it was just like, just one of those fateful, wonderful things that it, you know, can't even explain why I got the gig exactly. You know, a lot of people tried out, but I wound up getting the gig and I've been here ever since.
That's like football transfers, isn't it? It's like, oh, you get a call from the manager, like, come try out. Yeah. Did they put in a bid? Yeah. Did they put in a bid? Like, this is your contract.
There was no bid. I took whatever terms they offered.
So the terms, you signed on the terms.
there was no negotiation. I was just like, yeah, great. Okay, I'm there. Where do I need to sign? Great. Here, boom.
And you were in. Were you a fan of the Foo Fighters beforehand, or were you sort of?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, at that time, they had two records out. Mm. I mean, when that first Foo Fighter record came out, I think for me, and it seemed like everybody that I was around, that record was like an explosion, you know, like it was Dave coming out of Nirvana. Nirvana had been such a massive band that just kind of changed everything musically. And when that ended, for him to come out, step out from behind the drum set and make such a great record, and then go out and just own it and become that front man and lead the band, I don't know, it was like really a powerful, powerful thing to be a fan of. Like, I don't know why, like there was something about it that like, it impacted me more than a lot of the other, you know, big bands at that time. You just felt like you're rooting for them. You know what I mean? It's such an unlikely thing for somebody to step out from behind the drums after being in such a successful band and then go on to have success as a songwriter, a singer, a band leader, you know, all that stuff of their own. It just, I don't know that there's any other example exactly of that happening. You know, maybe Genesis would be the one that you could point to, but there aren't many people that have done what Dave has done in that way. So yeah, I was a fan.
Well, this is an unforgettable shirt. And you know, you guys have played at some big football stadiums. I have a list here, in fact. I got the Macarena Stadium in Rio.
Macarena.
Macarena. Yeah, Maracana?
Maracana, but let's go Macarena.
We'll go Macarena.
Yeah, we'll go Macarena.
We'll keep it Macarena.
We'll go to Macarena Stadium in Rio, which is the Maracana. The Cape Town Stadium in South Africa, Wembley Stadium, the Etihad, Stadium of Light. I mean, that's the Sunderland, that was my team before.
Classic.
What? Oh, really?
Yeah, what stands out? What? Like, tell me the thing that stood out for you.
Oh, man. I mean, there's been a bunch. I mean, of course, Wembley. It's like, that's kind of like on your dream list of venues you would ever want to play, just from all the, of course, all the footballing moments and but also things like Queen playing and all that stuff. That it's just such an iconic place, you know? So that's probably the most memorable. But we've had some crazy nights. We played down, I remember we played in Buenos Aires, and I cannot remember if it was where River Plate or Boca Juniors play. And we played this crazy gig a few years ago that was like, people were like jumping over the fences to get in. It was just like totally raucous and the weather was crazy and it was like be raining and then it would be like, you know, steam coming off the crowd. It just had this real ominous quality to it. And at one point, the power went out. The whole place, just the power just goes boop, and like, you know, that happens from time to time when you're playing these shows where all of a sudden it goes from, you know, crazy lights and loud music and then it just all goes quiet and you can just kind of barely hear the drums playing. And while that happened, they turned on the floodlights, like the stadium floodlights, which just gave it this crazy, like, you know, I don't know, it just looked like something in a post-apocalyptic movie or something. People just going nuts. And I remember Dave went out and just sang with the crowd and kind of kept the spirit going. And then at a certain point, it came back on. And it just was one of those crazy nights, you know, where it all could have gone pretty sideways, you know, but I don't know. We kept it going.
That's crazy, like the crowd just singing in the... Because this happened to me, because I'm a DJ. I've DJed in a club before where we've had a power cut. And people started booing me. And I'm like, I'm not in control of it. I don't put electricity in this place. I'm just here to DJ. But to have the
crowd
like
you
just...
did it. Yeah.
Exactly, it's not me.
I'm a British power. Like, yeah.
They're not going to go after the engineer that's at like the, you know.
He's right there.
Flicking the fuse boxes. They're going to drag the musicians from the stage and, you know, beat them to...
I've watched this video online where this like Russian guy, he's watching a club partying. What's the song? All I need is your love tonight. And the song's playing in the background. And he's singing, he goes, all I need. And then he goes... So he says something in Russian, like Kurva, da da da, and he just switches off the power from across the river. And then this party just boom, shuts out. And they're like, Muna! And he's like, ha 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 ha. Maybe it was that guy. Maybe he was there.
Yeah, maybe he was there, really.
It could have been.
He just goes around, buys plane tickets to like different locations, and that's shuts down power. Imagine that as your hobby. That would be a great TikTok niche. If he started a TikTok channel, I reckon he'd blow up.
You know, it's a crazy thing from all these years of playing, like, you know, like what we played, like you said, the Etihad and Stadium Light and all these places and all these different ones down South America. And then all the other sports arenas and stuff that we've played all over the States that, you know, where basketball teams and baseball teams and hockey teams play. So I have like an insane collection of strips, shirts from all these different sports teams. So that has been like, not like a real dream, but something I've thought about from time to time. When I get older, I need to open up a sports bar and just decorate the whole thing with strips.
I'll be there.
Because I have like all these different sports teams with my, and they always put like your name on the back and then, you know, give you one. It's great. My garage is full of them.
No, have you counted?
No, but I do need to catalog it at some point. I mean, I'm not kidding. I must have 100 of them.
Oh, from amazing. Over
the years. Yeah.
That's more than you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got around 200.
Oh, you got 200?
Yeah, I've got like modern ones, old ones, a bit of a mix of everything. But right. I'm also a kit fanatic. Oh, mate, if I saw your, you'd have to keep me away from your garage. Oh, mate, I'd be in there with my Frankfurter just loving it.
Oh, and that's not even counting all the Arsenal strips I've collected over the years, you know, that... Every time they put a new one out, I wind up buying it, you know?
Yeah, you have to. You have to buy your club shirt.
I think Chris has got the most shirts out of all the guests we've had. I think, because Rio said he's got...
Rio's got a lot of shirts.
Yeah, but I think Chris got more.
Yeah.
Well, I would bet Rio has more football shirts. A lot of my shirts are like basketball, baseball, hockey, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Have you college sports, because we play a lot of college, college arenas. And
your college sports are crazy. You get like full arenas that stuff to me is still mind blowing. Thousands of fans, the huge stadiums for kids.
That's crazy.
It's just insane to us.
But they've got the space.
We ain't
got the space here.
But they've got fans as well. There's a fanaticism.
Because, I mean, I guess like college soccer isn't a big thing over there because all those top guys go pro before that, right?
Definitely, yeah.
They all come up in an academy somewhere or something.
Different dynamic here.
Hey, as a total aside, you can't help but notice that, what's his name, Todd Boehly that took over Chelsea had that controversial comment this week about like how the Premier League needs to have like an all-star game.
We should have an all-star game. No, legit.
It seems like
I'm pro.
That's a terrible idea, but like do you think that people would like that?
I think people are just being a bit too stuck in their ways personally. I would do it. I think it's great.
What? I remember an all-star game.
No, there was never a Premier League All-Star game.
Could you do All-Star on a computer game or something?
Maybe on a computer game.
Was it FIFA 95?
It's funny because it bothers me. I don't really, to be honest, nothing against the MLS, but like as an Arsenal fan, I really only have time to follow one team. So I don't really follow any other leagues or any other teams. I don't really follow the MLS. But it has always kind of annoyed me that they have the playoff system. Like, we don't have relegation over here, but which I think would be cool if we did. But I think in an effort to make it more like palatable and sellable to American sports fans, they have like the playoff system, like most sports do over here. And that I always kind of annoyed me because I got into football. I got into Premier League football first. So I'm like used to that. You know, ranking system. You know, you just play the games and whoever's got the most points, that's the champ. Whereas over here, we have the team going into the playoffs could be miles ahead, but then ultimately they're not the champion because they had a bad night against, you know, some other team. Yeah, I don't know. That never appealed to me.
Yeah, interesting. So you're more of like a purist, football purist. So you wouldn't per se want a all-star game.
I'm kind of neither here nor there with that. Like, I don't wouldn't want to see the guys on Arsenal have to play any additional games, you know what I mean?
Fair.
Just because then it's more risk of injury and, you know, congestion and all that sort of thing. But, I mean, it wouldn't bother me, but I guess, like, the thing that would maybe be the most off-putting about it is the potential, like, establishing some sort of precedent of sort of Americanizing the sport, which I wouldn't want to... I started following it the way that it is, and I don't. Maybe I'm just a stick in the mud, but I like it that way. So I don't want to see it. I don't want to see that part of it change. You know.
Well, Chris, this next shirt now. I mean, Fuge. I think you should intro this because this already is haunting me already, man.
Oh, Specs has had bad memories of this one. Man. This is a Bayern Munich kit, the haunted one. And yeah, apparently you were on tour in Munich and Arsenal were playing Bayern Champions League same time. And then you went to the game. Yep.
I did. We were on tour over there. I wasn't actually in Munich, but I had a day off on the day of the game. So I flew to Munich, went to the game. And if you recall, Arsenal had shockingly beat Bayern in the first leg of that Champions League, whatever they were in.
Emirates, yep.
Beat them like 2-0 or something at the Emirates. So this was the second game. And I was excited and went to the game, got tickets through my friend at the club. So I was in like the Arsenal supporter section. But I was literally on the edge where it turns like, you know, three people over. It becomes the Bayern section. And Bayern came out and just ripped Arsenal to pieces. I mean, just annihilated them. It was, honest to God, it remains to this day maybe one of the fastest games of football I recall ever. Like, seeing them in person, I just remember Douglas Costa just looked like a blur.
Yeah.
He was just moving, just slicing and dicing. And just annihilated him. And the whole Arsenal section was just dead quiet. And every time Bayern scored, the whole Allianz Arena would just go completely ape. It was a sad night.
That battering was like 3 years in a row. Every time Arsenal got by in a draw, we just knew, oh my,
that's
here we
it,
go.
It's over.
Here we go.
It's over. When it's Bayern.
I mean, 5-1 three times in a row, was the start of my breakup with Arsene Wenger. That was when it was like, you know what, Wenger? You know, Instagram was kind of new. We had Facebook. I was doing videos.
Vine,
MSN. I was doing videos of just like Arsene Wenger, out. Out, out, out. And people thought I was crazy, but that was the start of my meltdown.
I remember we played Glastonbury.
What a festival.
I don't remember what year it was, but it was around the end of Wenger's time there. Were you at that show?
No, you know what? I wasn't. I only went to Glastonbury for the first time ever this year.
Well, this was my first time ever going. You know, it's like, you know, it's like the most legendary festival over there. And we've only ever played it the one time. And that's the only time I've ever been there. But I remember it was towards the end of Wenger's time. And you're looking at it. I was just looking at this massive crowd and everybody's got like flags and banners and things. And it's sort of, and they say all kinds of different stuff, you know, and in the middle of it all, there was somebody had a big banner that said Wenger out.
Wenger out at Glastonbury. Yeah, that's amazing. Yes.
People are creative with their flag. How did you react to that? Like exactly. On stage, did you want to just get the mic and be like, "Hey, you, Wenger out flag. What are you doing?"
I just had a quiet chuckle to myself. Like, even here. Okay.
That is amazing.
You know, it'd be sick if someone actually bought Wenger out at Glastonbury.
Oh, like get him out.
Get him out. Like Wenger out. And he just comes out.
Yeah. I tell you what, I got to meet Wenger a couple times at that fundraiser thing at the Emirates. I got to meet him and have a little chit chat with him. And then when I went back and took my wife and kids there, I have a great picture of me and my wife and kids with Wenger.
My wife.
And I want to say that was maybe, I don't know when that was, 2017, 2016, something like that. Yeah.
Has it calmed down, like the rock star life? Has it calmed down, like you're sort of, you know, more mature now?
Absolutely. I mean, I got married about, I don't know, almost 20 years ago, and we started having kids pretty much right off the. Yeah. No, it was a long time. No congratulations needed. But yeah, like once we sort of started having kids, like my whole life just flipped on its head. Like I used to be one of those people that slept till noon every day and stayed out all night and, you know, lived that life for a very long time. And then, and then when you have kids, all of a sudden you're up at 5:30, you know, entertaining them with Legos and building blocks and whatnot.
Specs has kids. Yeah. I'm thinking about it. Like the more I'm around children, I'm sort of like, it does look like they are the meaning of existence as I'm thinking.
100%.
As I'm contemplating, like, what gives joy? I'm like, well, you know, getting likes on Instagram and, you know, having potatoes. It's cool. But there's something about children.
Then you can post pictures of your kids to get likes on Instagram. See, that's how you tie it all together. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There is, I mean, I really honestly like it's a funny thing because you just, having kids is this weird thing that you really, it's like cliche, but you just can't understand it until you do it.
So it's a big shift.
Because everything that you think about having kids is based on how you view other people's kids. And it's just like, it's never the same. It's just so different when it's your kid, you know?
All right, sort out my candidates.
You'll find all the cliches become true. It's just like one cliche after another. You're like, it's a miracle.
Oh God, stop it. You're getting me broody here. It's 5:56 on a Friday evening on Strip.
I mean, to me, that sounds like you've got an evening of opportunity to go
that
make a baby.
It's true.
Know what I mean? That's what I'm saying.
It's true, but you know what I mean? Right. Let's not. I don't know. I need to sort out the candidates. Well, look, go back to the football.
Go back to the football.
Are there any haunted players, though, from Arsenal that sort of haunt you a little bit?
Haunted players.
Or the ones that played against Arsenal. Every time. Like someone that you're like, oh, that person smashed.
Well, there's haunted players. Yeah, well, the one that always comes to mind, the haunted players that played against Arsenal. I don't know why, because he's probably not even the the biggest candidate, but Diego Costa, I just always remember him being
that's
like
a
boogeyman.
He's back in the Prem, you know, by the way. He's like 42.
I know. I saw that. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? He go to Wolves or something?
Yeah, Wolves. Yeah, yeah.
I remember him drawing a red, like getting an Arsenal player, can't remember who it was, to take the bait where he just kept provoking him. And eventually the guy got red carded. I just remember the look on Costa Fe. He just had this little smirk like,
ha, ha,
got you again.
He eats raw meat. Yeah.
Does he really?
Yeah, raw steak. Not even cooked.
I don't.
Straight out of the packet.
Hopefully he doesn't haunt us again.
As far as our own players go, I'd say anytime I buy a jersey with a player's name on it, that's a sure, you know, they are sure to like just completely fall apart immediately because I have an Aubameyang jersey in my closet, and I also have a Sanchez one. So, and I think I had an Ozil one too. Sanchez, Ozil, and Obama. Those are all the jerseys that I had. And they all immediately, you know, fell out.
So we need you to stop putting names of players on the back of the jersey, or put the really bad ones on so they can leave. Well,
check out my Mustafi jersey.
We're talking about names on jerseys, not specs. I think let's go on to the last one.
Yeah, let's go on the named one. The one player you would have in the back of your shirt. Well, this is the Arsenal home kit 2000-2002, and you went with Tony Adams on the back.
Wow.
Yeah, Tony Adams, legend. Kind of like a great, like, he really embodies that sort of like that, the old school British footballer kind of vibe, you know? Hard man, super skilled, comes out of that like hard charging, hard partying tradition. But you know, now he's like got it together. I don't know. Yeah, I can relate to it. I read his book. Like in the interest of full disclosure, I got sober a long time ago, and so there's something about Tony Adams' story that that just kind of resonates with me. You know,
what a legend.
He's clearly been through it.
Yeah. Gives you like a depth of, I don't know, character maybe when you go through stuff. It's sort of wide, larger understanding of the world and life.
That's why I really liked, without like, I wanted Rob Holding to do really well at Arsenal. Because for me, he kind of reminds me of Tony Adams. I always like tweet about Rob Holding, how much I like him. But if I was like, Specs, please leave it. We've got Gabriel.
Did you watch the All or Nothing series?
All or Nothing is, one of the worst documentaries I've ever watched in my life. I'll be honest with you, Chris. I'm telling everyone.
Specs hates it. I don't know. He hates it.
I watched it. Yeah, I watched
really?
It. Yeah.
I mean, I had a little trepidation going into watching it because it was about last season. And we all know how last season ended, and it was a heartbreaker. So I kind of didn't want to relive that. But I actually enjoyed a lot of it. And I thought that Rob Holding, in particular, just came off as such a likable guy.
Yeah.
He just seemed like the you know, the kind of guy you'd want to go like sit and have lunch with or something. You seem cool.
Is there a player you would like to do that with? Like, have...
That lunch? I wouldn't like to do that with?
That you would. Maybe you could do both, but...
Oh, that I would?
Yeah, you're like, I'd love to meet you and just have a little chinwag, have some ratatouille or something.
Absolutely, man. Like, I mean, Tierney, for sure.
Oh.
Gabriel Jesus. Just looks like a guy, like, enjoying his football. I don't know, he seems like he'd be fun to see what he's all about, you know? Saliba.
Yeah,
he looks finally coming through. Yeah.
Yeah, Arsenal.
They'd all be interesting.
They're looking good. Arsenal looking good. The only thing is I'm trying to stay away from it right now because my Arsenal friends are already saying we're top of the league. That's the thing about our fans. We get too excited too quickly.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, let me stay quiet. Even though we're going to finish second, let me just... You know, just relax. Yeah.
Well, it's tough because, you know, the one thing that Arsenal hasn't had for, you know, many, many seasons now is consistency. And it's that hard thing of like when they go on a good run and then lose games that you really feel like they should be winning. So I know what you mean. It's like you don't want to get ahead of yourself, but things when you've sort of factored the preseason that was great in with the way they've started the season feels really good. I mean, it sort of put me in my place a little bit when they lost to Man United the other weekend. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, all right, all right, all right, this is going to happen. You know what I mean? But like, I felt like they, it seemed like that was a game that you expected them to win, and, and they didn't. I didn't watch the game, but I was driving to the airport, leaving London, and we had it on in the audio on in the car, and then I was following the scoreline. So it's like moments like that. You know, of course they're gonna lose games. What can you do? Mm. Every team loses games, and Man United seems like they kind of, at least for a moment, they got their shit together. So. I don't know. It's tough. I don't want to get ahead of myself. It's such a weird season with the World Cup being smack dab in the middle of it.
Yeah. Sorry, if we win a league, we have to meet and celebrate together. Like, whether it's next year.
Yeah, we'll get William Hill to get your flight.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
They haven't agreed to this yet, but if we put it on camera, just put it out there, you know?
They have to.
Manifestation,
right?
Deepak Chopra, let's go, baby. Do you know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah. Well, we'll be back over there at some point. So when we are, we've got to all go to the Emirates and go sing loudly.
As Arsenal fans, I know me and you have experienced the emotional times, especially winning FA Cups at Wembley.
Yeah.
I mean,
Home of football.
You performed at Wembley. You did a fantastic tribute to your friend.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And I mean, the video went viral of his son, Shane, playing the drums. Just talk to him about how emotional that was.
Really, really emotional. And almost, for me, more emotional kind of after the fact, the next morning, waking up and kind of reflecting on it. Because during the day, you know, on the day and throughout the show, I tried to just kind of like put my head down, focus on what we were doing, remember, you know, just think about like the songs that we were going to play and all the different changes and all the different people that we were backing up. I that's kind of how I dealt with it, you know, by trying to sort of compartmentalize things and just kind of, like put my head down and get through it. But after the fact, you know, it's when it kind of hits you, you know, when you see how the fans reacted to it, you know, not only in the stadium, but like, you know, all over the world, because we live streamed it out. So, yeah, you know, I mean, obviously terrible circumstance, but a beautiful show, you know, and I thought a beautiful tribute, you know.
I mean, yeah, that was, I mean, and that, like you said, not even just the people at the concert, but even people who watched the video afterwards, kind of drawn into that.
Yeah,
that
a moment, isn't it?
It's just a moment that.
Yeah.
It seems like entertainment, you know, it can have some really bad experiences in it as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, you know, front-facing, when you've got so much people around you, you've got all the success, all the eyes. Have you ever felt that pressure of, I don't know, I mean, I guess extreme fame in a way, and fandom? How do you manage to sort of stay grounded and find some sort of peace?
It's tough sometimes when you're in those moments to, like, remember to, you know, it's such a cliche thing, but remember to stop and smell the flowers and appreciate those moments. You know, a lot of times you're just speeding through them, and you aren't really in it, you know. It's kind of living in the moment. It's hard to live in the moment with anything. As far as like staying grounded, I think, like, you know, my family is what does that for me, and kind of always has, because, you know, no matter what we've done over the years, I come home and I'm still just dad, taking out the trash and driving my kids to school and reminding, you know, my boys to do their homework or whatever. You know, like my family just doesn't view me as it doesn't put me on a pedestal, you know, thankfully. So that's kind of what it's always been for me. Mm. It's a trip, though. You know, we've been getting ready. We're doing another tribute show here in L.A., pretty soon, in about a week and a half, and we've been getting ready for that, and you know, I think it's going to be a good one too. It'll be kind of a pretty different lineup, but I feel like, having gone through the Wembley one, and I don't think this next one's going to be live stream, so it's, you know, it's, I'm going to really try to, like, just, you know, have my eyes open and be in it.
Eckhart Tolle vibes.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Taylor Hawkins, and we'll be watching. We'll be supporting you in spirit.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah,
We'll find a way.
We'll find a way.
VPNs. Yeah, of course, you know.
Yeah. I'll see you on YouTube, boys.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Chris, where's Arsenal finishing this year, by the way?
Hey, man, like, if we just finish top four, I'm happy.
If we finish fifth again, are you saying Arteta out?
I'm not saying Arteta out. because, you know, I think like when you look at last season, especially when you watch the show and you sort of take into account like all the injuries and COVID and all just all the weird stuff, I think the way you see Arsenal stick with Arteta and not, you know, put too quick a judgment on what he's done is really paying dividends now. You know, he's finally weeded out a bunch of the players that he didn't want and got a bunch of good players in, and they're jiving with the players that are still there, and it seems like elevating everybody's game. So it's just, there's so many variables, you know. I think it just depends on the circumstance. If they lose out on top four for good reason, if let's say all of their best guys get injured at the World Cup and the back half of the season turns into a disaster, I mean, I don't know. Is that Arteta's fault, or is that just like a tough draw, you know? But if it's strategically his fault or something, then I guess that's a different story. But yeah, I don't know. I don't like the way teams switch managers all the time.
Yes,
I
think there's
something to be said for some consistency and letting, like football manager a guy realize Tinder. His vision.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like like Abramovich knows it's on Tinder, just like managers, like just swiping. You got to get into a relationship once in a while. Do you know what I mean?
I know. Because, I mean, that's a really good example, though. You look at Chelsea, and, you know, obviously we're not privy to the inner workings of that club, but like, you know, Tuchel directed all the transfer business they just did, and then they fire him right after they sign all these players. I don't know. It's hard to imagine that's going to be a good thing ultimately. I don't know. We'll see. I hope it's not a good thing for them, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, it's been a pleasure talking to you, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
So fun, you guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. It's a real treat to come do this.
I feel like a rock star.
Rock star.
I performed in a Macarena.
I feel like
Macarena.
A rock star that wants to eat potatoes and have kids soon. I think I'm getting to that stage. Yeah, I'm at my latter rock star stage right now, you know?
Hey, when I see you guys off camera, you know, next year, or when you guys come out to a show, I'll tell you all the, you know, pre-kid rock stars.
Maybe I'll stay single then for a bit more.
Thank you, Chris, man.
Thank you, bro. Thanks for coming, and, you know, thanks to our friends at Classic Football Shirts for providing us with the beautiful kits you were seeing on screen.
People, make sure you like, comment, subscribe. This has been Strip, brought to you by William Hill.
18 plus, please gamble responsibly. Oh.